When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom. Everybody, welcome to Don't Make Me Come Back There. We are a funny podcast about family. My name is Dustin Nickerson. I'm a stand-up comedian, the host of the aforementioned podcast. And alongside me in our state-of-the-art recording studio above Public Square Coffee in downtown La Mesa, California, is my lovely wife, my co-host, and my best friend, Melissa Nickerson.
Hey there.
Good to see you, Melissa. Andy is with us as well.
Ho, ho, ho.
And ho, ho, ho.
Christmas is right around the corner.
Christmas is like 130 some odd days away.
Christmas in August.
Yep. To me, September is the start of Christmas season.
Especially in the Philippines, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. September 1 in the Philippines, it's Christmas everywhere.
Really?
Yes. It's kind of a known little,
little
thing. Oh, okay. Kind of.
Well, to me, it is not even that it's... Christmas is near. It's just to my favorite 3 months of the year, 4 months of the year are September, October, November, December. That's to me is that's the chunk. That's the good year. That's the good part of the year.
Best.
It's the end of the year. It's the most holidays.
Fall.
Most routine, which we like. You're just waiting for me to move on. You're not into the subject. Hit me with that Patreon stuff.
That would kill you. kill you.
Well, I know in that look at you, sometimes you have a look in your eyes where you're just waiting for me to be done talking.
Okay. Well, anyway, I don't want to say anything. I've got nothing to add. We have our Patreon Zoom coming up. It's going to be on Monday, September 22nd. We just had our August one. It was fun. You were at martial arts for our daughter.
Kung Fu, baby.
And we had a good time. We had a good chat. So... get online and figure all that out, and then you can join us. You've also had VIP meet and greets.
VIP meet and greets at shows, merch discounts.
And then our behind the scenes every week, so lots of stuff.
If you remind me, the Slazdoms, who are patrons, they were at the shows in Madison, and they got... I was like, hey, you guys are patrons. They bought a hat, and I gave them their little merch discount. So, you know, there's real perks. Give a little more, get a little more. Give a little more, get a little. Give a little, get a little more. And now you're silly.
I'm laughing because remember, like 2 weeks ago, I said, give some, get some.
Oh, yeah.
Give some, get some.
Yeah. That's it. Anyway.
Today, on today's episode, we got Mike Vecchione.
Mm-hmm.
We Zoom Riverside. We e-speak to him.
Yes.
I don't know what it is.
E-speak.
E-speak.
Let's roll with that.
E-speak. We do a little e-speak.
What did we call it? Like, backseater are the fans, and then the...
Hitchhiker.
But
Hitchhiker with us, Mike Vecchione, who's got a new special on the Nate Land YouTube channel, which is, if you're watching us, it's on this channel. And it's called Low Income White. And you can give him a follow at Comic Mike V on all the socials, the Instagrams, the TikToks.
Mm-hmm.
Twitter, Facebook, whatever social you're on right now, Truth Social. I don't know that he's on Truth Social. Blue Sky.
whatever one. Yeah, I'm just covering. He's plugged in. Mike's plugged in.
Okay. All right.
We talk a lot on this. We talk a lot of stand-up. You like stand-up? This is a stand-up heavy issue.
E-speak.
Talk about
the San Diego Zoo.
We talk about the San Diego Zoo. We talk a lot about comics that we like and developing material and kind of the landscape of comedy. We talk about his time as a teacher.
Very interesting.
His favorite age groups that he taught over the years. A little bit about him, growing up, about him starting comedy 25 years ago in New York, his roommate life with Dan Soder and other comics. It's great. It's a fun episode. Nice to, it's the longest I've ever chatted with Mike. I've done weekends with Mike, and he's so funny. Comics love Mike. But I've done weekends, a couple runs with him, and we've ran into him here and there in New York. But this is the longest we've ever chatted, so it was nice. It was nice to catch up. A couple things to plug for you guys real quick here. Coming up, my comedy club dates. This week, when is this coming out? This is last weekend I was in Charlotte. And Greensboro. But next coming up in September 26th through 27th, I'm going to be at New York Comedy Club. Is that in New York? No, it's in Stamford, Connecticut. And then I'm going to be at the Kentucky Comedy Festival in Murray, Kentucky on October 3rd. October 4th, I'm going to be in Boston. The rest of October, 9th through 11th, San Francisco. 16th through 18th, Kansas City. The Neptune Theater, Seattle, on the 25th, the 26th, two theater shows at the Majestic Theater in Corvallis, Oregon. The rest of the fall, we've got Nashville, San Diego, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Brooklyn, New York. And to the new year, we've got a couple new dates here. January 2nd through 4th is Dallas. That was there. January 9th through 11th is Houston. We just added Valentine's weekend, everybody. Salt Lake City, Wise Guys Comedy Club. February 13th through 14th, four shows, roll out. Those are on sale now. Valentine's weekends tend to sell pretty well, so I would get tickets sooner than later on that one. And then it's a ways out, but it is on sale now. Portland, Oregon is going to be in April. I know April's so far away. So, you know, just put that on a calendar somewhere. April 23rd through 25th, Helium Comedy Club, Portland, Oregon. So there you go.
There you go.
Enjoy this episode with Mike, everybody.
All right.
Bye. There's a lot more specials. You were kind of the first big one on the channel, right?
Yeah, I did good, really good numbers on the last one. And this one is, it's good, but it's like, I just feel like everyone is down across the board, you know?
Yeah, on the channel or just specials everywhere?
No, specials everywhere.
Specials and sales are down everywhere.
Are they really?
Yeah, I mean, they're down. I mean, it's hard for us to realize that when we're in the Nate world sometimes. And you're like, oh, he added a fourth arena show. Great. I was joking with Nate last time. I was like, they're just going to have to start putting you in a field. And you just, like, there's no venues big enough for what you do anymore.
That's insanity.
But yeah, since the return post-COVID pop, like sales are down like a third since then. There was like this huge rush, and it was because everybody watched a bunch of comedy during lockdown.
Since they could get out, they got tickets.
And then they're like, I mean, we don't like it that much.
Yeah, I think people got tired of like, I'm doing crowd work clips and all that stuff, but like I'm doing the thing everybody's doing. But I think that's kind of over. Everything has its moment and then it's done and it's we're in a, you know, here and now consumption, slurp it up and spit it out type society. So it's like comedy. It's like, okay, but now I'm watching this other guy like fall down a flight of steps. And that seems more fun.
Hard to compete with that.
Yeah. I mean, when it comes to Kev on Stage did this recently. He said, just always remember, like, people are watching this on the toilet. And like, like this is not like, I know we think we're putting out like art on, and to an extent we are, but when you're competing with what somebody's scrolling at the toilet, like your well-crafted joke that took you 4 years to write is a higher piece of art than someone breaking through a trampoline. But on the toilet, that's that broken trampoline is better for that environment.
I know. Those are great.
Yeah.
So where are your kids when you're doing this?
Oh,
our daughters are in school.
And okay. Our son is in college.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, we dropped him off last week.
Wow.
Yeah. I've found, especially as our kids have gotten older into upper high school, now one in college, on stage and in person, I have to address the fact that our children are older almost immediately, because if I go on stage as a 40-year-old and be like, hey, I just dropped my son off at college, the majority of human beings are like, what? There's too many follow-up questions.
Right.
That now I'll stay on stage. I'll just go, hey, before you ask any questions, me and my wife met in church youth group. That answers all your questions. And just kind of dismiss it, because it is, and that's not to like brag or anything, but like when we were, our peer group has children much younger than us. So like when people
like
ask,
younger ages.
Younger ages, yeah. So when people are like, where are your kids at?
You're totally like, it would be normal if our kids were like 5 and 8.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You guys did it correctly. You did it the way Jesus wanted it.
Exactly. We took the book literally. And
you guys Adam and Eve'd it.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that's where they're at. They're in middle school, high school, and college. Oh, wow, that's the first time I've said that. We have a middle schooler.
It's really funny. It's like, I assume that you have little kids, and you're like, I'm like, where are your children? And it's like, one is fixing our car.
Yeah.
The other one, I think, is at a bar.
Yeah, yeah.
Like all older people stuff.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, one of them is, I think.
Waitressing.
No, mm-hmm. One of them is having his portfolio. He's meeting an investor right now to look at his retirements.
Retirement options. Wow.
Retired.
Yeah.
You guys are great. I mean, that's a great thing to say if you want a compliment coming back. It's like, my son is actually retiring. It's like, you guys look amazing. Yeah.
Thank you. It's very selfish to have your kids young, like in the sense that like, It is great.
You don't want to have your 20s.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's one way to look at it. But it's really best for you to have your kids young. It's not best for your children in the sense that, like, we were 22 with a baby. Like,
That's what's supposed to happen, though.
Yeah. Really? Well, I mean,
I it was pretty easy to handle like the sleepless nights and stuff, you know, like,
yeah,
you bounce back. Like,
I mean, because you were drinking then.
Yeah.
So it's like, I'm getting crazy. Baby's getting crazy. It's like we're both partying and then we sleep. And then we wake up groggy. It's like it just fits.
Well, in her defense, Melissa had only just started being allowed to go to the bars, you know. She was barely 21.
Yeah, I had gone pregnant. Yeah, I actually did go to a couple of happy hours for work, and you know, I was like 21.
Right.
And I just like had Sprite, you know. I was pregnant.
Oh wow, she's like she doesn't drink. No, she's pregnant. What, she just got in here?
Yeah.
That's so great.
Yeah.
I love the church youth group thing. I feel like I need a story like that in order to fit better into the Nateland sphere.
Oh yeah.
Well, you know, we could make one up.
Yeah.
Well, I'm Catholic. I went to CD catechism because I didn't go to Catholic school. We couldn't afford Catholic school. So on Mondays I'd go to religion class.
Mm.
Called CCD catechism.
That's so funny that you mentioned, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because every time I hear someone talk about like, oh, I went to Catholic school, they always go into the trauma route of how hard it was. And immediately my mind goes, oh, so your parents were loaded? Like private Catholic school is so expensive, right?
Yeah.
Any private school. Yeah. Right. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Catholic school's expensive. It was too expensive. Yeah. There were three of us and it was like, yeah, you know, I would break the bank. So we were like, no, you're going to public. And then, but yeah, the trauma of Catholicism, it really just depends how you're raised. Like we were raised, we're Italians and Catholic. So it was like, yeah, you love God. God loves you. Jesus, like all this stuff's good stuff. Like just take the good stuff. But as far as the fire and brimstone, like it wasn't, it was there and we were aware of it, but it wasn't like forced down. Like, you're going to go to hell. Like, it wasn't like, you're going to go to hell. It wasn't any of that. So it's like, it just depends how you're, and those are the people who are like, you talk to people who are complete atheists. It's mostly many are coming from that, where it's like they're just screamed that you're going to hell. And it's like, now they don't believe in anything.
Yeah. So much of what your interaction with your faith was as little to do with the faith itself. It was what version of what church or what parish or what, whatever you were handed by your leaders and your local church, and then also your parents, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's really how you're brought on board. It's really, that's really what it is. And now I look at organized religion kind of like as a conduit. If it helps you to be a better person and it helps you connect to a higher power, then great. And if it doesn't and you have another way, then that's great too. And I just look at it that way.
I believe, but it makes me a worse person, but I gotta believe. You know, even though my faith makes me a terrible, terrible human being, I'm just holding on to it anyway.
It's
a dumb bit. It didn't work. It missed everybody in the room and someone in a different room. It missed on everywhere that joke could miss. It missed.
I don't know if that was lost on me, though.
Faith for my bad behavior.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that's okay.
Well, you mentioned.
Well, how did you guys raise your children?
A mix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we.
That would be cool if you did an experiment where you sent them to different churches.
Yeah.
One Episcopalian, one Catholic, one Hindu. Like, just send them to all just, different faiths.
Just settle this.
Out the best.
Yeah.
Do a real test.
Yeah. That's good.
Oh, like just do a science experiment with your children.
Yes. That's great.
Yes.
We love you, but really what we're here is for data. We want some data. We're trying to settle a 1,000-year-long debate here.
I got a trifold board, and I got some charts.
That's really great. That's really a great idea. And then see who turns out best to be like, this is actually the correct religion.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good idea.
We were very open-handed with ours. And so, like...
Open-handed?
Yeah, yeah. You got it. You know, spare the rod, spoil the child. It's in the Bible. Mel and I go to church, and when they were younger, it was just kind of a thing you would do together as a family. Like, hey, everybody, we go to church on Sundays and maybe a midweek thing. And as they've gotten older, if they want to go, they can. We encourage them to, but we don't like get in the car, you have to go type thing. It's as they are got into their teen years, it's up to them. So the answer is sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. And then each of the three of them have wavering levels of enthusiasm on going, meaning that like one of our kids right now is very excited and goes to youth group and every Sunday and stuff like that. And then others are one of the others is like, hey, I sleep. This is my day to sleep till 2 p.m. And you're like, okay, I'm not gonna, because to your point earlier, it seems the people that walk away from this the fastest are the ones that it was more of a heavy hand, you know, in their youth. Yeah. So that's where we're at.
On so do you say the one who sleeps till two? Do you say the devil's got him?
Yeah, absolutely. And
the devil got him.
And
who slept till two? Yeah. A man named Lucifer.
Yep. And we brought you in here as a Catholic just to add a different level of prayer. We're going to pray for her right now, actually, just to see if we can get all the channels dialed.
Well, let's do it all before football. Because that's how we do it all before football.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you mentioned you need the story on the, you know, to fit in the Nate Land verse. One of the questions we put in our Facebook group, do we have any questions for Mike? And one of them, this was from Scott, was how is it being a PG-13 comedian living in the Nate Land verse?
In a PG world?
Yeah.
I have a joke that I'm the bad boy of Nate Land. Bad boy. Oh, you don't want to mess with me. Bad. I'm bad news.
You're going to corrupt.
I thought it could work either one of two ways. I thought it could help me. Yeah. It's a little bit different.
You're the reason our kid doesn't go to church. It's you. You're the bad influence.
You're the convert. They're going to convert you.
Unbelievable, Mike.
sleep until 2 p.m. No, I thought it could help me because maybe it's a little bit different, but then I thought it could hurt me because it doesn't fit into the brand as well. But I mean, you've been on the road, Dustin, so you know, it's like the crowds are so good.
Yeah.
They're so good. You know what I mean? That I look at it like, if you like it, you know, with any of us, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like some people, we're going to be some people's taste more than others. Mm-hmm. So some people might really like me because of the style. It's all in the style. Like we're all very proficient and good and we work very hard and, mm-hmm. And everything. So at this level, it just comes down to like, what's your preference?
Right.
I have for those of you listening, I have a understated, sarcastic, joke heavy style. That's how I describe it. Understated, sarcastic, and joke heavy. So if you like those things and you understand those things, you're probably going to like me. Mm-hmm. But if you don't, if you're more like, if you love like a southern twang and observational and something like you're looking for that, then I'm probably not your guy.
Right, right.
It's a matter of preference, I think, at this level.
Well, comedy is so big now and like it's only growing that I do tell like whenever someone like brings up comedians or comedy to layman, I'm always like, it is becoming more and more like music and that there are so many genres.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you've been doing comedy how long?
25.
25. And there's always been, I'm 14, 15 years in, like, there's always been that, but I do feel like, I don't know if you feel the same way, but there is a cup of tea for everybody at this point, because there's so many comedians doing so many different types of things. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a thing, though. It's like, I don't know if fans can see it. I think some of them can, the people who are real true comedy fans, but we can all see what each other is doing.
Right.
So I know what level of proficiency people are at when I watch them. And so do you.
Right.
And so do other comics who are in the rooms. And so do waitresses, people who are around it every day.
Yeah.
Like they get it. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's just, I really admire when someone has great writing and they're pulling it, you know, and it's like, that's why everybody loves Dave Attell. It's
right.
Like, there's no smoke and mirror there.
Yeah.
And everybody's got a little bit of it. It's like, there's nothing there. It's all just brilliant joke writing and brilliant performing. So
yeah.
That's why he's like a comic favorite. Everybody loves him for that reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's mm-hmm. so highly proficient, hits you with jokes that you don't see coming.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one guy I watch where it's like, we're all watching each other. But like, I wonder what his take is on this. I wonder what his take in this. Mm. He's the one guy where it's like, you start watching him with that comic eye. And then he hits you so hard and unexpectedly that you just become a fan and you're laughing like the people in the crowd.
Yeah, it's true. I tell mixed comedians laugh more than anyone I've ever seen.
Right.
And I think it's because exactly what you're saying, it's so unexpected. Like I can't, there are certain comedians that if you're around it enough and you've been around it longer than me, you're like, I can kind of see where this is going.
Right.
And I have an idea, even if I don't predict the punchline,
yeah.
I have no idea where Attell is going.
Right.
And my favorite kind of comedy is silly. I think silly is the funniest, and I think it's the hardest to do, and I'm not good at it. Like, being silly, I've told you this so many times. Like, I think that my favorite comics are Attell, and, like, Maria Bamford is very silly, and,
yeah.
like, Brian Regan is very silly. Yes. They're just silly, and they're like, they feel so free up there. And when I'm watching them, I'm like, I can't. It's so easy for you. You're so relaxed, and it's so it's very intoxicating how fun it is for them.
It's a great point, but I kind of look at it like sports, where it's like you prepare so hard, but then when you go to compete, like I wrestled and but in any sport it applies, where it's like when you compete, you don't want to have any, you want to be very loose and it's going to make you faster and quicker and more skilled in everything you do. And that's the same thing with comedy. If you go up there and you have all these jokes and you just have them. And then the whole thing is like in my head before I go up, I'm like, be loose, be playful, be fun, smile, have a good time. And it's like, especially in these arenas that we're doing with me, it's like, I have to like, Because it's overwhelming when you see the crowd. It's like, yeah. We just did the Boston Garden. I'm like, I'm blown away. This is where Bird is. I'm not even a basketball guy, but the legends of.
Yeah.
You're in that arena and it can be overwhelming. And you have to like dial it back and go, hey, you know, have fun. This is fun.
Yeah.
This is a great opportunity to have fun in front of all these people. But it should be fun.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, I know you've done late nights, but it's like, it's kind of the same thing in a late night where it's like, you're behind the curtain, the microphone, you've done the walkthrough, you've sent the transcript, like all these steps, you've got your outfit, you've ran it a million times and you're standing behind the curtain and it's just like, hey, go out there now and just let it rip and have fun in front of the country.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. Yeah. I give a little, when I remember to, very similar, I do a little pregame. I just say, be loose, be generous, be positive. Like, where you are, like, because it is, especially when you're trying to memorize or how's it all go.
Yeah.
And the more I'm focused on remembering, the worse it usually goes. You know,
right.
Like, it, you know, but that being said, you know, you do have to fill an hour up there.
Yeah. You do have to know it.
Yeah.
But that's why, I mean, to your point, it almost is better to like to have the stuff written on cards somewhere. But so it's like, if you have to stop, you know, in a special, it's going to be edited anyway.
Right.
If you have to take a step back and look, it's better to be in the joke fully.
Yeah. Yeah.
Than thinking about what's next.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like be in the joke fully. And if you have to take a beat and step back and look at the note card, do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. That's smart. Yeah. I bring a set list up for that. And this is only something I recently started doing because I don't want to forget where I'm at and then just blank out. Like, oh man, I was too loose. I was too in the moment and I forgot. I'm 15 minutes in and I forgot.
You just start kind of pulling whatever.
Yeah, look, yeah, exactly. like one of those, you know, when you're up there bombing and you're like, what bit do I got left?
Yeah.
good old fashioned corporate bomb.
I do that thing where it's like worst case scenario, like, even if it goes terribly bad, your comedic instincts will kick in and you will figure it out. Like you'll do something.
Yeah.
You'll do something to like keep it afloat until you can figure it out.
Yeah. That's probably true. Did you, I know you're based in New York. You've been there forever. Did you start like mics and everything in New York?
Well, I started in Philadelphia.
Okay.
For three and a half years. And then I moved here in the end of 2003.
Okay. Who was
your... started in October 2000. And then I moved here in 2003. And it was a much different landscape than it is now. But no, I've been here ever since.
Who were your people in Philly? It was like, wasn't Big J out of there? Or yeah.
Big J, Kurt Metzger, and Kevin Hart had already, and Kevin Hart, I don't know really.
Yeah.
Because they all moved.
Okay.
They had just left the club where I was, the Laugh House. And I started around the same time as Joe DeRosa.
Okay.
I started 8 months before DeRosa. And I always say, I always give him his credit. He was very funny right away.
Oh, that's great.
So
yeah.
We started around the same time. And then he moved before me. He became roommates with Big J. And I remember him coming back to the club to feature something. And he was like, I was like the top guy at the open mic at that point. And he was like, what are you still doing here? Like move.
Yeah.
There's nothing here for you. Move. That's what you had to do back then. It's like New York or LA. Once you had your little time, move to New York or LA. And I was like, yeah, but can't I just like drive up there? He's like, it's not the same, dude. You got to get up there.
Yeah.
And what can you, he's like, what are you doing here that you can't do up there? And it really made me think it's a great point.
Had you gone to college at that point? Were you day jobbing? What were you doing outside of comedy?
Yeah, I was teaching.
I knew that. Yeah.
Degree and I was a teacher. I went at night and got a master's in special education. And then I taught for 5 years. So I was just coming off a job that I resigned from my job.
And I should have known. I forgot. Because I remember your IEP joke being so good.
Yeah.
And that.
That sounds so specific.
IEPs have come a long way since you were teaching, too.
But really? Yeah. Have they?
Well,
I hope shorter. I hope they become shorter.
We're familiar with such things.
Yeah.
It's not bad. It's not bad. It's like really a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
It's executed incorrectly and all kinds of bureaucratic legal. But for every kid to have one sheet to be like, hey, these are your goals. And it's like, let's break them down. Like, that's not bad. That's actually pretty good. You know what I mean? And then if the kids can be conscious of their goals every day and really work at it, I think there needs to be like major overhauls in education, you know, for it to be effective. But we can go into that another time.
Well, that's why we brought you on here today, actually, was a critique of the public school system.
It's time to take it down.
Episode title. Well,
unfortunately, Catholic school is too expensive. So we've got to overhaul the education system.
Wow, I mean, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So you did you start teaching in New York? Were you like subbing or something? How were you getting income?
I had full day job teaching in a school in Philly, in three different schools I taught. And then I moved. And it's good because I taught in the city. I worked at a behavioral school. I did it like I do comedy. It's like open mics up. It's like I worked in a behavioral school. And then so I did that while I was getting my master's. And then when I got certified, I worked in a city school for a year, and then a working class suburb for 2 years, and then an affluent suburb for 2 years. So I got to see
moving up the ladder.
Yeah, yeah, like the minor league system.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then I moved to New York, and I started working with 3 to 5 year olds, which was the best. I mean, I'd still have that job now if I wasn't on the road. The job was great because 3 to 5 year olds is like they're moldable. You can still mold them and then see the progress in within weeks of working with them. And it's like very gratifying.
Yeah.
They're potty trained mostly.
Yeah.
By then. And and they're pretty verbal, you know, like
they're verbal. Yeah. Some aren't, but it's like
mostly
I would deal with the kids who had tantrum. Sure. It was called a wraparound, but you had to be certified to do it.
Yeah.
A teacher. And you'd work one on one with them. And sometimes you would go to their home. Sometimes you would go to the school.
Yeah.
And it was just fantastic.
Mm. Wow. You have a lot of various.
And I
experience.
Didn't think I was going to like young kids. I loved it. Yeah. I really loved it. Yeah. Yeah. Thought they were the best.
I have like, we've got preschool teachers, you know, that our kids had, or I have friends that are preschool teachers. Salt of the earth, like just some of the best people, like just encouraging and kind and so steady and just amazing. Yeah, it's amazing.
So you guys are in San Diego?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. I did that American Comedy Company a few years ago and brought my wife, Katie Hannigan, who Dustin knows.
Oh, yeah. Katie. And,
awesome.
Katie's great.
So we did them. We did a company. And then we took a couple days just to like go to the zoo. Mm-hmm. Actually, somebody from the crowd got us tickets to the zoo,
those are good tickets. Yeah. It's like
it is expensive. Yeah.
Bucks. Yeah.
Very expensive zoo. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what your animals are trained in, but it was pretty pricey.
The koala and the panda probably.
Yeah. Yeah. You see the price and you're like, am I going to ride these animals?
But the,
it's a world-class zoo.
Yeah.
The zoo ticket was more expensive than our comedy ticket.
Oh yeah.
Well, yeah.
I mean,
you're like, just one animal. Yeah. They got capybaras at the zoo. You can't compete with that. They got animals I haven't even heard of.
They put you in a cage.
Yeah. The zoo is great. I don't know your experience, but there is a lot of like fluffer at the zoo, and it is a little like the grocery store that like the good stuff's in the back and you got the stuff you really want there. You got to walk through a lot of like those like
birds.
Various, a lot of birds and a lot of various like four-legged horse-like type zebra creatures that aren't zebras, you know, on the way. And you're like, all right.
Taper.
Yeah. At a certain point, all the four-leggeds all kind of look similar.
Yeah.
And you're like, where is the polar bear? That's what I want to see.
Yeah.
Oh, it's down at the end.
Back. You're right. They hide him.
Yeah.
He's like the headliner. He's the closer. You got to go through a million birds.
Yeah.
To get there. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're the Nate, and you and I are the birds. Yeah.
That was a good hurtful analogy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We were talking about polar bears.
Oh man, I was
personal.
Yeah. Last Sunday I was at Taylor Tomlinson, who's like my sister in comedy. Like, we started together. She was at the Greek, and I was on the show as well. And the Greek's unbelievable in LA. It's one of the most beautiful. But it is very humbling when you walk out, and you're like, dude, it's not even dark yet. Because it's an outside venue. You're just like, you know when you just stare in a beer line, and everyone's like kind of looking at you, and they're like kind of passively enjoying it, but they're like, no, but what I really want is to have this for Taylor.
Yeah.
And I get it, because I've been to concerts where you're like, nah, I mean, the opener's great. I'll passively enjoy this.
Right.
And I'm guilty of it as well, but you're like, they're not against
it's
you.
Nature. It's like, this guy has to win me over.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I need this guy to win, versus they always give the other person, the headliner, the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, that's who they're there to see.
The way it works, yeah.
I do think that that's...
But I'm happy to have the chance to try to win you. And I know you feel that way, too. It's getting the chance to win you over. So that's my opportunity.
Their arms are crossed. They're like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see.
If they're seated at all.
Yeah.
Usually their seats are empty if you're on first. But the... what I was going to say was... it doesn't matter. It wasn't an important thought.
About the Greek, Taylor? No?
Okay. It's gone.
We've moved
on. It was going to be a great thought. And might have been the highlight. It might have been the clip of this podcast.
Oh.
But your bright yellow shirt distracted me. Okay, we had
a... That's the plant.
Putting you back in your early New York days, this is a question that we got from one of our fans as well, Tristan, who specifically asked about Dan Soder being a roommate with Dan. But this is... I think this is a question where our son just moved in with a bunch of... He's in the dorms, and so he has a bunch of young male roommates. I would love for you to speak to the pros and cons of having comedian roommates. When I started comedy as 27, I was married with kids. I never did a living with comic type situation.
Oh, yeah. So- I think it depends who you're living with. I mean, I got super lucky with the... How many comedians did I live with? Two.
Yeah.
I lived with two. So one was James Mattern. I don't know if you know him. He's a New York guy.
I know who he is. I don't know him personally.
Yeah. So he was really great, fun-loving guy and a good energy in the apartment. So I lived with him for maybe 2 years, two, 3 years maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved in with Soder, and we did 10 years straight. And it was just the best. Mm. I think it's just, if you're living with the right comedian, it's the best. Because we were just, we were also best friends. So it's like, you wake up and it's like, you know, he's doing his thing, you're doing your thing. And then you can bounce jokes. Is this funny? What do you think of this? Or if you know, you know, about a venue or about something, hey, what's your experience with this? And you know, like, he's like a solid guy, so he'll lay it out. Mm. And usually it's exactly what it is. So it's like a good, it's such a fruitful relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's great.
That's amazing.
And we had just so much fun too. Mm. It got to the point where it's like, we both, I mean, especially him, he's doing great. He was doing awesome. So he's like, could have moved out. Like, we could have both moved out, but it just was like, neither of us, like, we'd have girlfriends and then break up and then be like, whatever. So it's like, why leave the situation? We're good friends, and we're having a good time, and we're close to the train. We love where we live, the neighborhood and all that stuff. So it's like, why move? You know what I mean? Until, you know, we both met Katie's, ironically, the pandemic hit, and then we split. You know, simultaneously, but it was just a fantastic, you just fall into a situation where like, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Roommates are tough to find, and friends are tough to find. So when you can land one, like, oh my gosh, I get along and you're compatible and you're respectable. I don't know.
I don't know how this, like, I'm on the road a lot, and as you are, but like, we had a whole scene here.
Yeah.
It has evolved over time where it's like, I think because of social media, I'm not blaming it, but I think because of it and all this stuff and podcast, people kind of do it on their own. They don't need each other as much as we needed each other day. And it just felt like a tighter knit community, and it's felt like way less comedians and a tighter knit community back then.
So I'm sure
everybody,
true.
Everybody, it felt like we were like choosing to live this specific kind of life. And this is what we're doing. And nobody, it's not no one had dreams of being famous or having being rich and all that stuff. We all probably did, but it's like, we were just in the cut, in the scene, just working to get funnier every day. And I think that now that all the gatekeepers are knocked out of the box, which is a good thing, and that there's social media, you can just earn it from the fans. That's great. But as a result, you get a lot of people coming in who maybe aren't comedy purists, maybe are marketing people or have a degree in, you know, social
video
media
or
something like that. They're not where we came from, which is like boots on the ground, open mic on the way up type, loving comedy. Type.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I was just going to say, and, go ahead. Finish.
Well, I just think that it's not to, not that they're bad and we're good. I'm not trying to paint it that, that way. I'm just saying it's like a different type of person coming into the scene versus what we had before.
Yeah. Yeah. What were you going to say, Mel?
Oh, I was just going to say, I think perhaps that's true for a lot of industries, you know,
yes,
like post COVID and with the internet. Just like that collaboration and camaraderie is, I mean, if you're working from home or half the time or the whole time, like you're just, you are missing out on a lot of the elements
but
that
it's
you
a good,
describing.
It's a point. It's a great point that you made, which is like, you know, every people can complain about this industry and the way that it is, but every industry has changed. Everyone has changed. So it's not like only this one.
Our son's out of university and they're like, well, do you want to just do online classes? And we're like, no.
No.
Don't even consider an online class.
Yeah.
Like, go.
Yeah, you got to go.
You know, so everything, you know, the landscape is just so different now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you might have like... Also, what you said there, it might even have like a deeper idea when you said like, because of social media, people don't, it feels like you don't need friends the way that you do, but that's not true. You do need, and it, but
and coworkers,
it can, and coworkers, and, but like it can have, you can have a sense of where like there's, oh, I'm getting enough human connection through my phone, because it does kind of feel like it, but almost in the way that like, what's the artificial sunlight? It's like artificial sunlight, you know, that you get in. We would always have in those lamps in Seattle.
Yeah. Because we call them happy lamps, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. And you're like, I'm getting plenty of sun. And then you go experience real friendship or the real sun. And you're like, oh, this is actually what I needed. What I needed was to sit down with a friend and connect and have this time with a roommate or a shared peer and just be like, and it doesn't even always have to be a deep thing. Just be like, how was your day? Oh, I got to tell you this thing here.
Yeah.
As opposed to somebody going, let me tell you about my day.
Yeah.
Right.
What you're describing sounds like an amazing like TV show or movie.
Yeah.
You know, like that I want to watch. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, let's pitch it.
But I let's pitch.
Oh, okay.
Is it even a real thing if we can't monetize?
No, no. Mike and I would never have a conversation unless this was going to be on a YouTube, a monetized YouTube channel.
We never actually talked.
Melissa forgot she met you.
I don't actually want to hang out with you. I want to watch the show about your life.
Yes.
All right, you guys. Leanne is streaming on Netflix right now.
I don't want to talk to you, but I want to give the impression that I'm having a great time.
I don't want to be friends with you. I want people to think I'm friends with you.
Yes.
That's the real value here.
And then I want them to buy into the energy and then go see our Patreon.
Yes, exactly.
What's the problem with that?
You guys, I'm going to be...
This friendship is not making me the money it used to.
No. You guys, no. I'm going to be at Duckworth's Comedy Club in 2 weeks if you guys want to roll through. Real club name. Anyways.
But no, I know what you're saying. And it's like, there's something to be said. I said this before, so I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself, but I'd almost rather watch a bad television show than, and I'm good at not scrolling through my phone. But what I'm bad at is like checking my page every 5 seconds. So I've got to curb that. But like just watching YouTube like I said, everything's evolving. YouTube now seems to be like just people with arguing with each other, taking people down. He watched the host go silent. Can I make you guys go silent? That would be a clip if I could make you go silent.
Melissa, do shocked face.
Yeah, yeah, shock for the clip. And guest makes host go silent. I could clap back at you if that would help.
Or you could storm out.
Clap back at you, yeah. And then that makes you go silent?
Yeah. Yeah, that. And then guest storms out of interview. That's big, right. Too. Right. You know, celebrity offended by question.
What if you guys were to own me?
Now we're talking.
Could you own me?
Yeah.
If guest gets owned.
Guess, yeah. Or pwned. That's another one. Owned or pwned. or pawned. I think those are the three. Yeah, it is. It's
that's
so
just visibly upset. Maybe I could be visibly.
Yeah. It's so clickbaity. It's every like, oh, great. I'll watch. And again, that's who you're competing with in your long formed art.
So if I watch, I used to think watching YouTube is like, well, this isn't TikTok. It's like a longer form. It's not going to cripple my attention span. But because it's evolved into that now, which is confrontational and clickbaity, that it's like, it's almost better to watch a bad television show because at least you're following a story.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like that's better than watching people try to take each other down or, even sports, like I love sports, and just the guys are just yelling at each other about sports.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. You know.
Let me ask you this, as someone who's started 25 years ago, do you feel like then young comedians have, in like the landscape as it is it easier? Is it harder? Is it better? Is it worse?
Once in a while, someone will ask me, I'll be like, dude, I have no idea.
I don't know what to tell them, right?
I'll tell you what they are doing. I think this is what they're doing, because like even a year ago, two years ago, everybody had rooms. They had rooms. This is what they were doing in New York. They had a room. They'd have a room. Mm-hmm. So they'd get themselves stage time. They'd also have a photographer show up to the room. And the room was really small. So they'd take all these pictures and they'd invite like more established comedians on. They'd take pictures. And they would be like, this is what happened at the Stardust or whatever the room is called last night. And it's like they would have all these pictures and they would take pictures of it and they would try to build the room that way. Now that's not even happening anymore. There's no more, very few independent rooms like that. It's just people doing stuff into their phone or sketches to try to get a following before they develop their stand-up.
Interesting. Yeah. That's...
Which I get, because it's like, that's how you're being judged. You're being judged by your following. So the clubs are venues, man. The clubs are businesses. I understand it. So regardless of what you're doing on stage, it's like, how many butts can we get in the seats?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I first started, and I'm sure it was the same for you, the last thing I wanted was any of my stuff out there for like the first 5 years. You know, you're like,
and an anonymity.
Yeah, no, I wanted to get good in a local scene. You know, I just wanted to, Alonzo Bowden said this once, like, remember when you first started and all you wanted to do was work the weekends? Like, I remember the first time I started Madhouse Comedy Club here in San Diego, they called me and they're like, hey, can you feature this weekend? I was like, this is the greatest moment of my comedy life. Yeah. I get to feature for the whole weekend. Yeah. That's crazy.
Like four or five shows.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's all you wanted.
And I might order some food.
Yes.
Why did I order some food?
I might get crazy. They got food. Am I going to drink? I'm going to take a piece of chocolate cake to go. Unbelievable. And I was happy. But now it's like immediately, if I were to like even like put myself back in that, say I'm that same thing's happening right now, I would immediately go, oh, I better get a tripod. I better go film these. I hope a thing happens in the crowd. Do I have a talk? Because even these clubs, they are even using middles and hosts based on their following. It's not
right.
It's not purely like when we started, like, I don't know, how funny are you?
Are they a crusher?
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's like a bringer show every weekend.
Online, I haven't figured out online, obviously, but it's like it's different than a live performance because we would take a joke, we'd take an idea and then work it and work it and work it. And it might start off pretty funny, something like that has some legs, kind of funny, but you would develop it and then take it different places or shelf it and not use it again. But in to its completion, you would take it and work it, work it, work it, work it, and then have it. And that's online. That's kind of not, it's almost like, the joke isn't as important as the topic is.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're talking about a topic that gets people juices running, that's kind of more important than the actual joke. Because half the people don't know, because it's all just the internet. It's just thrown out there. So people don't, they're seeing all kinds of different things and they don't even kind of know it's a joke. Or if they do know it's a joke, they're not focused on it being a joke.
Yeah.
I almost have to hit them over the head and be like, hey, this is a joke. Yeah. This is not serious, what I'm saying. Because then there's people who like disagree with the premise.
Yeah.
And you go, what are you doing? This is a joke.
Yeah.
And because it's all like mixed together and they just don't. And so the people who are commenting,
So the comments become part of the punchline. Where the revised joke is the comments. You know?
Yeah.
So the first draft the comic presents, and then everyone just kind of goes nuts in the comments. And
yeah.
Right.
The version.
And in their defense, they just scrolled for something that was news. And before that was like, because you're just, I heard someone say, like, you're just a character in their phone. You know, they don't give us the benefit of the doubt. Well,
I think if you kind of like taught, like, that's the thing with a face-to-face interaction where it's like, do you know what this is?
Yeah.
Like, this is, this is what the, which, and it's easy for them to be like, well, it's not funny. It's like, but take that out of it for a second. This is what the person is trying to achieve. This is what I'm trying to do. It's like, there's none of that there. It's just like, they see it, they either like it or don't. But it's odd to me that like the topic will get more attention than the act, because we're all looking for the joke. I'm like, how can I be funnier? It's like, oh, that's not the game anymore. It's like online, it's like, what's interesting?
Right.
What's that? Now I can figure out like what's interesting, not to me, but what's interesting to people.
Yeah. You go, what was the big weekend story? Well, just give me till Monday and I'll see what all the clips my friends wrote jokes about. What all the comedians recorded on the Sunday show.
I kind of liked the, we used to do a show at the Comedy Cellar called This Week at the Comedy Cellar.
Yeah.
And I liked that show because it was Comedy Central and they would give you the topics.
I think it was the start of this, what you're describing right now.
Yeah.
I can't believe that show is phenomenal.
It started this trend.
It's applicable now. And it's like, you give everybody the same topics and you go.
Yeah.
Write a joke about it.
Yeah.
Of what's happening. You have a couple of days.
Yeah.
And it's like an even playing field, and then, you know, and then we'll select whichever jokes are the best jokes.
Yeah.
In our opinion, you know what I mean? That's subjective, but it's like, that's great. It's like, we all know what we're doing.
Right.
But what we're trying to do.
But because of that show and those clips did so well, right as Instagram Reels were kind of starting taking off, comedians go, well, I don't need Comedy Central and the Comedy Cellar to do this. I'll just go do this on my own.
Right.
And and they were right to do that, but it was nice when it was just kind of an isolated show as opposed to, because I feel that pressure too. You're trying to make this like long form hour and you're like, do I got to riff a couple topical things in here? And, you know, because you're right, you got to try, you know, you got to try. But you said this earlier that, like these things have a moment. Like I do think the crowd work moment, every once in a while I'll still see one pop off, but they're not, it gets convoluted and suddenly it's like, well, what am I doing to carve out my own uniqueness in this, you know? But that being said, to me, that makes comics like you and specials like yours that much more valuable because it's so much. And I'm no offense to the people doing those other jokes and those other things, but what you do and what a good hour is so much richer. And I think people know it, you know, they just go like, wow, this took a long time.
Yeah, it took a long time.
Yeah.
That's what they don't know about like what we're doing, which is like developing an hour takes a long time. It's like, I didn't just come up with this. It's like, it's a trial and error over time.
Yeah.
So it's like, when people are negative about it and they go, well, this sucks or whatever. It's like, yeah, but I didn't try these jokes once. Like, I don't know if that's what you think. Like, I didn't try them once.
Yeah.
Over a period of time.
Yeah. How
it's like writing a book.
It is. It's very much like writing a book. And comparing it to a random clip is like a doodle next to a painting. You're like, these aren't the same. I know they are similar to you, but how long did this hour take you? How long do hours take you?
This one took about 23, I think 2 years.
2 years. Yeah.
Two to three.
Yeah.
And it's usually, I did an album in 14, an album in 18, a special in 23, and a special in 25.
Yeah. So
it's like three to four years.
And I'm sure you're already working on the new stuff because that came out.
I am, but it's like, I don't know. It's like, you put the hour out, YouTube has changed. We're lucky to have Nate. I'm very lucky to have Nate put me on his platform. But it's like, I don't know. I just feel like all of us need that other thing.
Mm.
I mean, there's some people who can just, their comedy has made them pop. Burr is one of them. Nate is one of them. I think Gaffigan, but like, it's very hard just to do. We all kind of need the other thing. And it's like then figuring out what that other thing is and then trying to explore that. So I don't have a podcast currently. So maybe looking into what I would want to do as a podcast or I did a bunch of sketches with Katie. We did about, you know, we did a round of like 15 and then another round of 15.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll do that again. It's like, you kind of need the other thing where people will pay attention to your comedy.
Yeah. Feeding the machine. And even a lot of the comics who have made it in comedy, they still did land on like a big platform, right time, right place. You know, you've been along. There is like some like undeniability in this industry, but I mean, it's so much harder to sell tickets than it is to be funny. There are so many. I mean, you, especially a New York guy, and you've been around the Cellar and stuff, where you're like, dude, there are so many comedians that are so funny that nobody has ever heard of. And they, and maybe on the outside, I think like the longer I'm in it, the longer I have the perspective, like people might like think that that's like a, not a win, but you're like, if this is your job, you still won.
Yeah.
Like having a job that you care about and you're passionate about is it's already puts us in pretty rare air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know.
Right. And like being a comedian is different than marketing yourself.
Mm.
Those are two different skill sets.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I mean, people don't realize that even. It's like just being a comedian and writing and developing an act is different than getting booked and building a following.
They're
different sets. Some of it overlaps, but much of it doesn't.
Well, you have what I think is one of the, and I don't know if you feel it, but you have one of the harder things that are even hard to grasp or articulate, but you are beloved and respected amongst comedians. Like your peers love you.
And
say the best things about you and like, so good, so funny. Like you make comics, a comic sit down and watch your set, you know, and that is, again, like, hopefully you don't have to choose between one of the two big things. Mm-hmm. But Yeah, I mean, you're on a short list of comics that when your name comes up, comics all stop and go, so funny, so great, you know, absolute crusher.
Well, that's very sweet.
Yeah, and I do think
saying that, and thank you for not mentioning that I Venmo'd you.
Yeah, of course. Oh, I did mention that before you came on. Yeah. This today's episode is brought to you by Mike Vecchione. and I think we do have our next thing. I know you say we need that extra thing. I think it's this movie pitch Mel's telling us to write about friendship.
I think so too.
Uh-huh, that 10 years of living with Dan.
10 years of living together, yeah. We should have just filmed that and put it out.
That's great, yeah.
You know what I mean? We didn't have to, we could have just filmed, like, now it's to the point where it's like, you could just film different parts of it and hours of it and then just give it to a producer or something. They'll chop it up.
Yeah.
They'll put it in the right place and then... It happens.
Don't even make a movie. Just make a great trailer. That's all you need to do anymore. You're like, he did that movie, right? How did it do? I don't know, but the trailer was great.
Trailer was amazing. I'm just thinking about putting a Patreon up and then just nothing.
Yeah.
Just like a Patreon, be like, guys, and it's just me, you know, talking.
I like that. Well, let's set that up when we're done here immediately for him. It's a good time to plug our Patreon, Mel. Well, Mike, thanks for doing this. Congrats on the special.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Hope you're doing well. I don't know.
I hope to see you soon.
Yeah. Maybe we'll be on a run together soon or in New York, or let us know when you're out this way or something.
I know you guys are probably going to tag everything, but do you mind if I just talk a little bit?
Please do.
So please watch my special if you haven't. It's on YouTube, the Nate Land homepage. Nate was kind enough to give me another special. It's called Low Income White. please watch it. And all my social media is at Comic Mike V. So please give me a follow at Comic Mike V. And yeah, I think that's it.
That's
YouTube it. Special, Comic Mike.
And what's your Patreon?
And look out for that Patreon.
Patreon is not in play yet. I want to do something where I'm just,
It's all right. It's, there's a...
Maybe I'm confronting people. Why haven't you given me money?
That's a great point.
Pictures, yeah.
I would just go on Instagram Live right now and do that.
Yes.
I'll join you. We'll do a collab. We'll just... That'd be you and I, to use a wrestling term, we can both go heel out of nowhere. Just get real.
A confrontational collab?
Yeah. You know, Nate Land needs some heels. Who's the heel of Nate Land? Who's going to be? Because, you know, heels could get popular. So
yes.
People forget The Rock was a heel. So
you and Greg kind of have some
Me and Greg got some beef, but that's neither of us gone full heel.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that could be your angle, Mike.
That's it.
Well, I want like Julian to be having a conversation with Nate and then me come up and hit them both with a chair.
Yes.
And then be like, what's up?
Yes.
What's up?
I like that.
And then meanwhile, perfect. I'm just off the tour.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reality of it. I just get banned from the tour.
But
no, I'm on the tour and they have to deal with me.
Yeah. But full circle, Linda McMahon, the wife of Vince McMahon, the head of is the head of the Department of Education. So now you can overhaul the public schools like you wanted to.
I love it. I love it. Full circle.
Perfect.
All right, buddy. Good to see you.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thanks for doing it. Hey, everybody, we want to give a special shout out and thanks to our As Essential as Oils level patrons. That's $25 up a month and up. You get it. Thank you, everybody. It means a lot to us. That is Adam Bush,
Avril Griffiths,
Allison Nelson,
Andy and Darlene Gerton,
Bonnie Galindo,
Brandon Schoenberger,
Carrie Teague,
Chris Finn,
Christopher and Bridget Finlin.
Code to Grow.
Courtney Eibling.
Damaris Diaz Steven.
Daniel Owens.
Dave and Melissa Cox.
Dave Hoagland.
Dustin Daly.
Jason and Francis White.
Jen Thirk.
Jonathan Rivera.
Jordan Cowan.
Juliana Smith.
Lori Amos.
Lauren and Nick Rachel.
Matt and Sam Slosdom.
Michelle Carlson.
Nick Cordell.
Norman Perron.
Preston and Rachel Wilson.
Also, if that's Perrin, I'm sorry. Also, Preston and Rachel Wilson. I'm sorry if we messed these up. We're trying our best.
You're up.
Raina Camps.
Robert and Nellie Capen.
Stephen Menya.
Zachary and Tammy Moyle.
And Tiffany Payne.
Bye. Thank you.